sense. He didn't like being challenged on translations, and he didn't like being challenged on this. As I said a moment ago, Doctor, she was self-hypnotizing. A choice.
All right, then,
the physician went on. What about drugs? Alcohol. No drugs, no alcohol in excess. Depression? Schizophrenia? Hysterical reactions? Near-death experiences? He answered yes to the last two, explaining once again, revealing as little as possible, that Dr. O'Hara had been treating patients who suffered from both of those, and she had experienced a kind of empathetic blowback. Not uncommon with good hypnotists, Dr. Yang mentioned. Is this similar to the trauma work she did in Phuket, Cuba, and elsewhere? Ben brightened. You know about that? I've read what she has published. Yes, that work and this are very much related. Back then she was seeking a way to short-circuit PTSD, if you will. She was continuing where she left off. The doctor seemed less alarmed when he learned there was a context for the experiments. The diagnosis for now was psychogenic unresponsiveness. Dr. Yang said they would keep her in the hospital for more tests, but that was all he would say. Ben would have to find out more from Caitlin's parents. He had phoned them, waking them, trying and failing not to alarm them. It was one of the few times his smooth British accent and composure had been a total fail. They were on their way in from Long Island. So Ben left the complex, largely uninformed, not quite aware of what had happened, and utterly unsure what to do next. There were no phone messages. He hadn't expected any. Neither Anita Carter nor Flora Davies had his cell number. Anita was a colleague and friend of Caitlin's, a psychiatrist who had stayed with Jacob at the apartment. Davies was the head of the group, an organization based in a Fifth Avenue mansion and which collected information and relics from Goldercon. Ben did not know anything about the latter. Neither had Caitlin, before she went down to its headquarters, a visit that led directly to her collapse in adjacent Washington Square Park. Bundled against the cold, Ben decided to do what he always did, take small steps and see where they went. He paused in the doorway of an office building to call Caitlin's landline, to make sure Jacob was all right. That was what Caitlin would have wanted him to do. Anita picked up in the middle of the second ring. She said that the 10-year-old was in his room, up early after a restless night, but that there was something more pressing. What's wrong? Ben asked. There's someone here, Anita said, with concern in her voice. First tell me, how's Caitlin? Where is she?
In the hospital.
Is she all right?
She's unconscious. Doctors wouldn't tell me much.
Shit. Anita, who's there? The woman hesitated. Just say it, Ben told her. Nothing would surprise me.
All right.
She lowered her voice, said closely into the phone.
It's a Vodou priestess and her son. Madame Langlois and Enoch.
Jesus, yes. Anita seemed caught off guard. How did you... Was Caitlin expecting them? I assume she met them in Haiti.
Not expecting that I'm aware of, Ben said.
Caitlin had met the Vodou priestess and her Hoongan son while trying to help a young girl in Port-au-Prince. Gaëlle Anglade was one of the youths whose trauma seemed linked to Goldercon. If the duo had been planning to visit, Caitlin would not have failed to mention it. They just showed up. About an hour ago, Anita said. They flew in from Haiti, came right here, and the priestess flat out announced that Caitlin is in the coils of